Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. When you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters. The very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. Have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
All righty. Take your eyes off the woman in the red dress. Welcome to the Mark Kreslin Show here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. I'm live today and for the foreseeable future here at 2 o'clock in the Central Time Zone. That's 3 o'clock for you out there on the East Coast. And we will be live Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. That'll be 3 to 6 for you out there on the East Coast. I'm glad you joined us. We're live. That means you can call in anytime you'd like at 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. My website is markkreslins.com, as usual. Through that website, you can email me at mark@markkreslins.com. Always visit with me over at my Facebook page, Facebook.com/The Mark Kreslin Show. While you're there, please like the page. And you can follow me over on Twitter at Mark Kreslins. I continue to strive to get better at that. So, new time slot, huh? 2 to 5 Central Time. 3 hours of my blather. How can you possibly take it? Well, hopefully you will grow to enjoy it. Invite your friends. Because we're going to do exactly what we did when I was live Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Central Time to 8 a.m. Central Time. We're going to promote transcendent and eternal truths. That's the mission statement here at the Veritas Radio Network. We're going to restore the proper order by promoting transcendent, eternal truths always in all ways. This happens to be one of those always, i.e. the 2 to 5 slot. We are opening up afternoon drive time. For those of you that have been following talk radio, you know that there are a couple of busy times of the day. There's morning drive time, afternoon drive time, and then evening drive time. In my previous talk show career, I was in drive time back in Maryland, same hours, except I was on the East Coast. It was 3 to 6. That's a drive time hour. So we're rolling out another step in the progression of the Veritas Radio Network, programming live throughout the day. How about that? Here, here. Cheers to the Veritas Radio Network. So we're getting started here. This is the inaugural show. Just think you'll be able to tell your children and grandchildren someday that you were there at the very beginning when the Mark Kreslin Show went live on the Veritas Radio Network at 2 o'clock. So I'm glad you have joined us for the inaugural show. You feel free to call anytime you'd like at 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. Well, as you all know, there is a ton going on around the hashtag American Union. My gosh, you know, I have probably 6-7 articles just today on California seceding, getting out of the union. I've got a couple I'm going to address today, but I want to start off with talking about the Donald Trump interview last night. I did watch it. I'm assuming most of you did as well. But even before I get to that, I do want to point out something just came across the wire. Gwen Ifill, dead at age 61. You all probably know who Gwen Ifill is. She's host of the PBS. She's an anchor at PBS's NewsHour, Washington Week. She died after a battle with cancer. Wow, how sad. She was 61 years old. Oh, my. I actually liked Gwen Ifill. I thought she was a very classy communicator. So, anyways, that's just coming across the wires here. Sad day for the Eiffel family. We send our condolences here from the Mark Kreslin Show. But to the Trump interview last night on 60 Minutes. What'd you think? Call me with your thoughts about it. 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. I'm curious what you thought about it. You know, you will remember from the very beginning of the Trump emergence as the likely Republican nominee and then eventual Republican nominee for the White House all the way through the campaign, I hesitated jumping on the Trump train, and I'm glad I did. I don't know about you, but there were a number of parts of that interview that were deeply troubling. And I'm going to remain, you know, on the sideline here. He's not the president. He's the president-elect, though we're beginning to learn more and more about his governing style as we see some of his appointments, the people he's picking to high-powered position. I think probably most people were a little bit concerned that Reince Priebus is his chief of staff. And for those of you who don't know what the chief of staff does in either a presidential office or a congressional office, which is where I worked, they are the gatekeeper. They really have an immense amount of power, certainly probably only second only to the president himself. They are usually close confidants. This may be a little different here because Reince Priebus and Trump, as far as I know, don't have a close relationship prior to this election. But they serve a role of being the gatekeeper. They really try to prevent the meetings that you don't want covered in the Oval Office to occur in the Oval Office. They screen people who are coming into the Oval Office to make sure that they're vetted properly, that they aren't people that have a baggage with them that could taint the president. The chief of staff is heavily involved in policy discussions. It's a very powerful position, and everybody was waiting to see who was Trump going to appoint as chief of staff. There was some talk about Kelly Conway. There was some discussion about Stephen K. Bannon being the chief of staff, and he pulled the trigger on Reince Priebus. So, you know, for some people, myself included, that's a bit of a concern. Legitimately so. There are some heavy questions about his connection to Paul Ryan. They're both from Wisconsin. He's a pretty committed Republican, obviously, as the head of the GOP, the Republican National Committee. You kind of have to be committed to the Republican Party to have that position. And so right out of the gate, we're getting a bit of a yellow flag. Again, I'm not ready to throw red flags yet. I'm not there yet. But I will be a honest broker in this. He's the president-elect. There's no changing, notwithstanding all the conspiratorial theories out there about the electors going and changing their vote. And folks, this is why I can't be conspiratorialist. My gosh, the rabbit holes you end up chasing when you go the conspiratorial route. Now there's this big thing floating around that supposedly there's a move afoot to deny President-elect Trump the election by the electors, a whole swath of them changing their vote. And I guess this is just the nature of politics today. There's nothing we can do about it. It's just there's always going to be those people that post that, well, they heard it from somebody they're connected to in Washington said that there's a move afoot to have unfaithful electors by the bucket loads just change their vote in December when they go and actually cast their vote for the president. Folks, it's not going to happen. So, you know, let's just remove some of the conspiracy stuff out there that it's not going to happen. The other conspiracy is Trump's a plant, and maybe he is. I don't know. This current appointment has me concerned, quite honestly. It's a yellow flag, but there's more than just Reince Priebus, right? There's Jamie Dimon. You know, he said something last night in an interview that really probably caught my attention. You know, I shouldn't say more than anything, but it certainly weighed heavily on me as he was discussing this. Leslie Stahl got around to asking him about the reality of, you know, building a government. Because there is truth to that. I mean, at Schedule C appointees and major secretary positions and cabinet positions are all appointed. Some have to be confirmed by the Senate. Others are just straight-through appointments into the agency. So he's got somewhere around 4,500 of these slots to fill. It's a lot of slots to fill. When you think about 4,500 Obama appointees leaving and needing to replace that, that is a gargantuan task. And so quite naturally, Leslie Stahl asked the question of Trump, you know, how are you doing with this? And doesn't it kind of contradict all of your statements on the campaign trail that you wanted to drain the swamp, that you wanted to challenge the existing system with where lobbyists, there is essentially a revolving door between your serving in a agency or as an elected official all the way over to K Street in Washington, D.C., where you suddenly become a seven-figure salaried lobbyist. And so she wanted to challenge him on, you know, it's kind of a breakdown here, President-elect Trump, that on the one hand, you want to drain the swamp, but you're putting the swamp back in. Well, I was really a bit alarmed at his response, and all of you watched it, you saw it. One thing that Trump does not do well is when he gets caught kind of blindsided like that. This is the thing I like about Trump, actually, because he's raw. It's who he is. You know, most narcissistic megalomaniac politicians, they've got every question already thought out and they know their answer. It's just robotic, man. They just go right to it. Their cadence doesn't change, their eye connection doesn't change, their posture in the chair or where they're standing doesn't change. Man, they just got it. This is the thing that appealed to me about Trump. He's raw. He's just an average billionaire, if you will, who decided to run for office. But he was clearly, at the same time, when he gets in these uncomfortable positions, he doesn't really know how to manage them very well. And he comes across looking like he's trying to be political without any of the skills to be political. So Stahl pins him down on this and says, but, you know, President Trump, one of your great claims during the election was that you were going to drain the swamp. You were going to change the status quo. Things weren't going to be done the same way then when you get into power as they are being done now. Yet, when we look at your first set of appointments, it appears as though things really aren't changing that much. His response was, well, who else do I have to draw on? I was deeply troubled by that. You know, you mean to tell me in a country of 320 million people with all of the incredible access and resources he has had over his career that he can't find, probably 100 or so executives that would come in and actually help him drain the swamp who could then make recommendations for second-tier Schedule C appointees or undersecretaries? You mean to tell me contact list in his smartphone that he doesn't have 100 executives he's dealt with over the years that he couldn't call them as the president-elect of the United States and say, "Hey, Sally, I gotta weigh on you a little bit here. I gotta put a little pressure on you here. I need you to come into my administration. I need you to do this because I need help draining the swamp. And if I just go and replace them with the Jamie Dimons and everybody else who knows how to run Washington, D.C., then I won't really be fulfilling my campaign pledge. So would you mind taking a hiatus from your Fortune 500 company, coming over here, and I'm going to put you in charge of the Department of Energy. I'm going to make you the cabinet secretary for that, and I'm going to ask you to drain the swamp there." And he could go right through the list. His list of all these contacts. I think he's almost 70 years old. You mean to tell me it is as successful a career as this man has had? He doesn't have 100 people that as the president-elect he could pick up the phone and say, "I know you're busy on your business, but you know, you're successful by now. The business isn't dependent upon you. It runs by itself. Can you take a hiatus for 2 years and come over here and help me drain the swamp?" That wasn't what he said at all. Did that alarm you? Call me at 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. Again, here on the Mark Kreslin Show, you're going to get just frank analysis about this. You see, I don't have an allegiance to Donald Trump. I don't have an allegiance to the Republican Party. I don't have an allegiance to the conservative movement. I don't. I don't take great glory in this win. I'll explain that a little bit later in the show. I'm not all caught up in this. I don't think it's a great win for liberty. I don't think it's a great win for anything. And I'm beginning to see that maybe my instincts were right on this. What did you think when you heard President-elect Trump say, well, you know, that's all we've got out there, are those people there in Washington. They're the ones that know how to run government. Well, that's the problem, President-elect Trump, is we don't want those people back in power. They're the ones that have messed everything up. You made a campaign promise over and over and over again that you will drain the swamp. You did a great service to the blue-collar, white working-class people who went to the polls to the total of 60 million people because they believed that you understood what they believed, which is this was a swamp you needed to drain. You tapped into the hostility and the anger. See, folks, I don't believe this is a cultural election. I don't think this election has much to do with culture at all. I'm going to get to a Harvard Business Review article here in a moment. People are already starting to analyze what the heck happened. I mean, y'all were there Tuesday night just like I was when the gloom and doom hit Fox News that this thing was over, that Trump was going to get crushed, that it was probably going to be a 40-state win by Hillary, only to find out throughout the night that it wasn't a 40-state win for Hillary and that it ended up being a pretty big win for Trump. People are now saying, what the heck happened from there? How did he get there and to where he is now? People are beginning to analyze, what was the electorate saying? What was the majority? Let's be clear about this, by the way. There was no move of the American people. Let's just dispel with that term. I hate that term, the American people. I don't use it on this show. I won't use it on this show. There is no monolithic American people. I'm an Okie. I live in Oklahoma. Yes, I get it. I don't like the name Okie either. I'm working with friends of mine down here right now to try to change it to Oklahomans. But nevertheless, for right now, I'm an Okie. Just like you folks down there in Texas, you're Texans and you Alabamans and you Louisianians. I'm not an American. I don't live in America. I live in Oklahoma. Let's get that straight right out of the gate here. That's where I live. So people are trying to figure out what the majority of the people living in 50 states, what was the rationale for their vote? Why did 60-some-odd million people go and say, vote on behalf of Donald Trump, essentially saying, we agree with you? What was it Trump was saying that they agreed with? It wasn't the cultural issues. He didn't take strong positions on anything except abortion. Already, I'll get to that in a minute. He's getting a little squishy on this. He's got some good things, he said, but you know, we'll talk about this in a minute. On marriage, a little squishy there, right? So he didn't really take strong positions on these things. Typically, when he did, I was very impressed. Another thing that caught my attention about Donald Trump is that it appears that there's somebody who understands federalism in his circle, because his seemingly intuitive reaction was send the issue back to the states. Here, I'm all for that. We'll get to that in a minute. But that wasn't what the election was about. No, the election was about jobs, feeling put upon by the elites in Washington, D.C. He resonated deeply with the blue-collar, white working-class population out there, deeply. In their mind, he was one of them. And so as Leslie Stahl, you know, asks questions about, are you going to drain the swamp? And then the next question is, it doesn't look like you're draining the swamp when the swamp is taking back over. That's a yellow flag, folks. Is it for you?